Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the marketplace. Coming up, Citi's sustained appreciation drives down inflation for June 2025 to 13.7%, recorded in May. And we'll hear from the government statistician.
On year rate of inflation for June 2025 was therefore 13.7%, a 4.7 percentage point drop from the May 2025 inflation of 18.4%.
Some analysis also coming up. Citi recalls first monthly depreciation against dollar for this year, despite the Bank of Ghana injecting more than $4 billion to support the local currency from January to July. Plus, Ghana Revenue Authority says July 16 as new date for implementation of one Citi levy on fuel, a move that could result in petroleum prices going up in the coming weeks. My name is Daryl Kwao. We'll discuss how all of that will impact inflation. Don't go anywhere. Thanks for staying with us. We begin with the latest inflation figures. Inflation for June 2025 dropped by 4.7 percentage points from 18.4% to 13.7%. This represents the sixth consecutive drop year on year. The rate also marks the lowest since December 2021. Addressing the media at the June Consumer Price Index presser, government statistician Dr. Alhassan Idrisu attributed the drop to sustained monetary and fiscal policy gains.
The CPI for June 2025 was 257.3, down from 260.5 in May 2025, and up from 226.4 in June 2024. Year-on-year rate of inflation for June 2025 was therefore 13.7%, a 4.7 percentage point drop from the May 2025 inflation of 18.4%. This means that on the average, the prices of goods and services increased by 13.7% between June 2024 and June 2025. On month-on-month basis, there was a deflation of 1.2% for June 2025, implying that the general price level fell by 1.2% between May and June 2025. This means that Ghanaians paid less for goods and services in June than they did in May 2025. The June inflation we have just reported is a sixth consecutive year-on-year drop we've seen in inflation, and is the lowest inflation in terms of year-on-year since December 2021.
All right, that was a government statistician. Lead data analyst joins Isaac Ofeji joins me in the studio to discuss this real significant drop. 4.7% sounds incredible, but that is what the government statistician is reporting. Break down the figures for us.
Well, so Dara, if you see, this is the national value, which is around 13.7%. But if you break this down, you see that there are more than 10 regions with inflation above the national average, so 11 in total. So you can see that regions like the Bono, Volta, Oti, Ashanti, Western, Northern regions and even the Upper West region having inflation as high as 32.3%. So although the national average is around 13.7%, you still have, you know, regions recording higher inflation rates. And all of these regions, all of these 11 regions are supposed to be the food basket of the country. So it simply means that structural, you know, issues still exist. And in fact, if you see the Greater Accra, it's falling below the national average, 12.2%. It's because it was one of the regions that really benefited from the, you know, that campaign to drive down prices, malls and promotions going on in the Greater Accra region. And then also transport fares. What you see is that Greater Accra region was one of the regions that really benefited from that transport fares that was cut in the first quarter of the year. And so for me, I think if you look at the other breakdown, looking at the transport sector, which recorded a deflation of some 8.1%, When anything happens in the transport sector, it has that multiplier effect. And that is the reason why we are seeing that 13.7% inflation. So 8.5% deflation in the transport sector. I mean, hitherto you would have seen an upward, it will be amongst the top five or the top three. But currently we are recording deflation at the transport aspect, and this would definitely affect other aspects of the
spending.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you look at even education, health, and others are all recording higher inflation. Just look at non-food inflation rate, for instance, somewhere around 11.4%. But food inflation is still above the national average, in excess of 16%. That tells you that food is still very expensive, although we've seen the city gaining more than 20% against the dollar since the beginning of the year. We've seen fuel prices going down. Now, the big question is, government is on the verge of implementing that one city additional levy on the export price of fuel. What will be the impact? Are we going to see the transport component of inflation reverting, coming into the inflation aspect? And what will it be? What would be the key impact on the main headline figure that we are seeing today? But, I mean, the most important thing is that if you look at it on the national scale, this is the first time in a long time that we are recording somewhere around 13.7%.
I think there's a breakdown when it comes to food inflation.
Now, I mean, Daryl, if you look at this, just look at oils and fats, 9% inflation. All the others are recording deflation. And so you shouldn't be surprised if you see inflation coming down to 13.7%. It's simply because you see majority of what usually will drive inflation upwards or in the deflation zone. Water, for instance, is on a deflation trajectory. Soft drinks went down by some 1.5%. There's also milk and other dairy products also down. It's also cocoa drinks also down. Fruits and nuts, all of these things are down. And it explains why we are recording that low 13.7%. And so definitely, if you look at it on the national scale, where although we have that national average of 13.7, there are 11 regions still recording inflation rates above the national average. And if you look at a place like Upper West and Upper East regions,
I think the figure was 32.
And
five, I may be wrong, but it was in the 30s.
And in fact, these are supposed to be the food basket of the country. That's where we are supposed to produce and bring it to the capital. But one thing we know is that when you see producer price index coming down, it definitely will affect inflation. So I wasn't surprised because I saw May producer price index and was significantly very, very low to what we used to see last year and last 2 years. So I was expecting this significant drop, but not more than 4 percentage points. It's really, really key. And the key question is the Bank of Ghana going to follow suit and possibly do a rate cut? Some of the questions that investors, economic agents are asking.
Yeah, and
currently,
you mentioned the one city fuel levy, which of course is going to be a subject for discussion on Beyond the Numbers.
Absolutely.
That's in just under an hour. Tell us what you'll be talking about.
Well, the president actually announced and has launched the 24-hour economy and accelerated export, development program. We are asking a very simple question. The 24-hour economy will actually run on the good wheels of a good energy sector. So the question is our troubled energy sector that we pay in excess of $1 billion, dollars to buy fuel. This year, we're estimating that we could pay excess capacity or shortfalls close to about $2 billion. Mm-hmm. Do we have a strong energy sector to actually support the 24-hour economy? So we've got all the data. We've got all the president said. He said the 24-hour economy is going to run on 8 pillars. But definitely, without energy, all of these 8 pillars would definitely would not run to where the government wants the 24-hour economy to
That's at the top of the hour, at 2 p.m.
2 p.m.
Yeah, I'm joining Beyond the Numbers with Isaac Ufieje, Winston Taki, and Caleb Zibrim. Thank you so much for the update. We want to speak right now with Nelson Kwagbeji, who is head of finance at Melbourne Capital. Good afternoon to you. With more reaction to the inflation figures that we have seen, first off, how significant is the drop in inflation to 13.7% for Ghana's economic outlook?
Very much, Daryl, and good afternoon for having me. Let me say that just as your reporter rightly said, the reduction from 18 the last month inflation to 13.7% this month is really significant. In fact, some of us were not really expecting this sharp reduction. However, the reduction could largely be attributed to government-owned fiscal consolidation measures and the tight and strict monetary policy stance that the Bank of Ghana has taken. To investors, I believe this one will serve as an incentive to them. Government policies and programs are yielding the desired result. And again, also, hope and confidence is bouncing back to the Ghanaian economy. The fundamental factor that is actually driving the inflationary, the disinflationary pressure has to do with the stability of the Ghanaian cedi. The relative stability of the Ghanaian cedi can be felt at the pump, that can be felt in all the market across the country. The only thing that is worrying is that when you are having a national inflation of 13.7%, the regional inflationary pressures are still high. Look at Upper West region of over 30%, and look at Bono region. And so I think there is a mismatch. And so policies and programs that government wants to implement regarding the agricultural sector in general must be region specific. For instance, when you go to Upper West region, most of the road network, they are very bad. When you go to Bono region, and you go to most of the Bono region, the road network, very bad. And so maybe cutting of the food product from where they are produced to market centers, even in those regions, is problematic. So I think that government needs to be specific and region-tailored program in order to curtail, and reduce significantly some of these regional worrying inflationary figures.
Yeah, and Isaac made a point about that figure, the fact that, we are seeing this mismatch, pointing to the fact that there are still some structural issues. But generally, food and essential items were cited as key drivers for the slowdown. There's been good harvest, prices are generally low. How sustainable is this?
Well, I think from the trend that we have witnessed from January to date, I think that the disinflationary pressure will continue till the end of the year. End of year target is 11.9%, inflationary figure that the government wants to achieve. Currently, we are having 13.7%. Mm-hmm. Now, food inflation itself is actually coming down. Non-food inflation is coming down. Imports of goods are also coming down. And so all this will culminate into driving, the sustainability of the inflationary pressures.
You mentioned the city as well, the fact that that has also contributed to transport fares going down. We've seen a cut in fuel prices as well. And so, like you pointed out, we are seeing the effect of the city's appreciation on inflation. Is that the case?
Yes, that is rightly the case. And so you realize that any slight depreciation of the city would translate into an inflationary pressure. In fact, in the month of July, I think, the government will be paying its, debt obligation in terms of interest. The question is, could that endanger the inflationary pressures? Again, the One Ghana fuel levy that will be rolled out this month, that may also contribute in one way or the other towards the depreciation of the cedi. However, looking at where we were, 14.70 at December 2024, to about 10.3 Ghana cedis currently, I expect the stability of the cedi to continue, despite the fact that government will be making some huge payments. I expect the inflationary pressure to reduce, to remain stable from now getting to the end of September.
So we don't expect a significant impact when the one cedi fuel levy kicks in on July 16th.
Well, we expect an impact, but we don't expect a significant impact. The reason being that technically or automatically, prices at the pumps will increase. And when prices at the pumps increase, we expect transport operators to, as it were, negotiate for a slight adjustment in their prices. And so we expect that to translate into a little inflationary pressure, but I don't think it will be significant enough to derail the inflationary gains that we have made so far.
I want to backtrack, talk about the city, because we raised an important point in our headline that has to do with the city depreciating, recording its first monthly depreciation in the month of June, despite the Bank of Ghana injecting some $4 billion to support the local currency from January to July. Is this one of those things? Do you see this as a threat?
Well, I think the slight depreciation of the city has to do with the demand on the dollar. But I think going forward, government just raked in about $370 million. We have built enough buffer since the beginning of the year. Just 2 or 3 days ago, the CEO of the Ghana Gold Board also made mention of the fact that for the month of June alone, about $900 million was raked in. So I think with all these dollars that are coming in, we must not experience any significant depreciation of the city, because we have built enough buffer to actually meet the demands of those who actually need the dollar. So I don't expect any depreciation of the city. In fact, the city has stabilized within a band of 10 Ghana cedis for almost a month and a half now. And so I expect that to continue even ending July, I guess, thereabout. Even if government begins paying out its debt obligation and other commitment for mid-year, I don't expect the city to actually, you know, depreciate that much.
So 13.7% looks good. What should be the warning signs for the government? What should they be on the lookout for?
Well, the government actually made mention of 11.9% in the budget. Mid-year, we are at 13.7%. So you realize that the percentage difference is just about 2% thereabout. And as it stands now, if all the fiscal consolidation measures and the strict monetary stand taken by the Bank of Ghana still continues, what we expect is that inflation as at the end of the year should be tilting towards a single digit. And that will be very good and very significant for the economy.
All right, Nelson Kujo-Kwagbedi, thank you so much for your insight and perspective to these latest inflation figures from the Ghana Statistical Service. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. You're watching The Marketplace. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we are going to talk about the 24-hour economy policy and how that could impact the tech sector. And Let's Talk Tech. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome to Let's Talk Tech. Aside from inflation, our eyes are on the launch of the 24-hour economy policy by the president today. The president revealed a series of program initiatives aimed at transforming Ghana's economic structure. And he talked essentially about some of the other things that they're going to do, such as Go 24, Build 24, Fund 24, Go 24, and other strategic interventions designed to boost agriculture, infrastructure development, financial access, and efficient logistics. Well, how about tech? How is tech going to benefit from this 24-hour policy? Quick thoughts from lead for Eyes of Africa, Henry Kobler. Good afternoon to you, Henry. What do you think?
Good afternoon, Daryl. So thank you very much. If you're looking at the policy point for the government, where they are looking at the 24-hour economy, I mean, to me, it had really looked like it was a more disguised strategy to use technology to get more improvement in terms of infrastructure, in terms of agriculture and all of that. And so it really meant that technology was going to play a very major role in what was going to be deployed. I mean, you generally would have technology being the base point for all of these deployments that you're looking at getting into. And for me, it's very good because, again, it really increases the sort of demand for digital services. I mean, across board, if you're looking at any of these services which is going to be deployed, say passport services, where if you're having printing of passport, it's more like digitalizations in that part. And so, again, for me, I think that it raises the point of digitalizations all across board, the demand for digital services. Again, it also comes in where you are boosting IT infrastructure development as well and creating new jobs in the tech support and operation services, which would be coming. I mean, you have night people getting into giving tech support, network monitoring, software engineering, customer services and all of that, which is great for me. Again, it's also going to look into fintech and how it's going to improve on fintech. It didn't really come as a surprise that the government had looked into putting in the 50 million funding away for fintech companies, because again, it envisions that almost everything that it's looking at in terms of that the 24-hour economy is really going to cash in or get through with it from the fintech point, or it's going to check out from the fintech point. And so it's very important that you have some level of stabilization in the fintech and the digital payment systems as well. And again, some level of automations and AI adoptions coming in to make things easier. And so you wouldn't really be having people on the farms using people on the farms farming at 12 o'clock in the midnight, but you could have some level of automation coming through with it.
Yeah. Henry, 30 seconds. I want you to react to another story that is of interest to us. GIFT CEO Achiese stepping down after nearly two decades of service. What has been his contribution to the tech world?
Amazing. I mean, he's really worked a lot more. He's pioneered the Ghana cashless agenda. I mean, he's done very well when it comes down to the mobile money interoperability. Again, he's also looked into that level where you're having real-time payment systems in terms of GIPS and his role that he's sort of played there. The QR code was also one of the things which he was able to achieve, which I really like. And then, again, financial inclusion advocate for us. He's been at the forefront, and I think that he's done a very good job.
Thank you so much. We'll talk about this some more, I'm sure, next week. Thank you so much, Henry Kobler, lead for Eyes of Africa. Thank you so much for joining us for the Marketplace as well. More news on our website at joinline.com/business. My name is Daryl Kwao. Thanks for watching. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Marketplace. Coming up, some oil marketing companies to keep prices of petrol unchanged at the pumps, but diesel expected to go up this week. Also coming up, oil marketing companies call on government to address key industry concerns before reintroducing the suspended one city levy on petroleum products.
My commitment to supporting the implementation of the levy, in short, and contributing to Ghana's energy sector recovery. However, the sustainability of OMC's business heavily relies on implementation of the corresponding relief measures.
And starting today, the Ghana Revenue Authority is introducing a revised taxation scheme aimed at bringing micro and small businesses into the formal tax net. I will be speaking with the Chief Revenue Officer at the GRA, Victor Yao Akogo. My name is Daryl Kwao. Thanks for being with us. Details coming up. Fuel matters, some oil marketing companies have indicated that petrol prices could be kept unchanged while diesel will go up at the pumps this week. Here's George Raffa with the latest.
Oil marketing companies should from today start reviewing their prices at the pumps in line with the adjustment every 2 weeks. The Chamber of Oil Marketing Companies at a news conference yesterday announced that petrol should go up by some 2% per litre, or diesel will witness about 5% hike per litre. But our engagement with some individual oil marketing companies, including some market leaders, showed that the price of petrol may not be touched, while diesel will go up marginally. Others have told Joy Business that they still want to monitor the market a little bit before they review their prices. So maybe don't expect any changes from today at the pumps, but rather in the coming days. If prices should go up this week as projected, it could be the first time since February this year that we are seeing prices go up at the pumps.
Meantime, the Chamber of Oil Marketing Companies is calling on the government to address key industry concerns before reintroducing the suspended one city levy on petroleum products. The levy, which was put on hold last month due to surging global crude oil prices, is now back on the table as international prices begin to decline. However, the OMCs argue that certain structural issues affecting the sector must be resolved first. Dr. Riverson Opon is Chief Executive of the Chamber.
Consequently, the Chamber commends the Ministry of Energy and Green Transition, the Ministry of Finance, National Petroleum Authority and also the Ghana Revenue Authority for their responsiveness and constructive engagement over the past weeks. Through these dialogues, we have seen substantial progress, particularly the postponement of the implementation date and considering the relief measures for OMCs. Our position. On this basis, we reaffirm our commitment to supporting the implementation of the ESS DRL, or let me say the levy in short, and contributing to Ghana's energy sector recovery. However, the sustainability of OMC's business heavily relies on implementation of the corresponding relief measures, which were proposed and mutually acknowledged during those engagements with the Ministry of Energy and Green Transition. So in view of the above, we respectively called for the following actions to be operationalized without delay. Extension of the levy payment period from 30 days to 40 days to ease cash flow constraints from our members. Transition of eligible OMCs from cash and carry model to credit-based tax payment structures supported by insurance bonds or bank agreement. And also, phased removal of all petroleum subsidies to eliminate distortions and ensure market parity. We firmly believe the implementation of the relief measures stated here are essential structure adjustment to ensure the levy implementation is both sustainable and equitable.
Well, we have more from that news conference because the Chamber of Oil Marketing Companies is emphasizing the calls for government to remove the subsidies on marine gas oil as many illegal traders continue to make commercial gains from the product. According to the Chamber, the country lost about 707 million cedis in potential tax revenue from the low-tax marine gas oil due to its subsidies between 2020 from 2020. Here's more in this report. The Chamber of Oil Marketing Companies, COMAC, is calling for the removal of the subsidy to plug the loophole that has enabled misuse by non-compliant actors. This action, it says, would help restore market fairness and generate critical revenue to reduce the energy sector debt burden. The Chamber argued, had this revenue been collected, it could have been channeled towards reducing Ghana's mounting energy sector debt or addressing critical infrastructure gaps within the downstream petroleum industry. Here's Chief Executive Dr. Riverson Opong addressing the media Monday.
From our findings, an estimated over 700 million Ghana cedis in potential tax revenue from the low-tax MGO local was subsidized between 2020 and 2025. This figure represents a significant opportunity cost for the nation. Had this revenue been collected, we believe it could have been channeled either in combination with ESS DRL proceeds towards reducing Ghana's mounting energy sector debt or addressing critical infrastructure gaps within the downstream space.
Chairman of the Chamber, Gabriel Kumi, called for a holistic crackdown on retail outlets that may be engaging in the smuggle of the products and other misconducts.
If you are a member and you are diverting products which are meant for our fisher folks, a subsidized product, into a filling station for your selfish end, then you don't even qualify to be our member. So we want the authorities to crack down. Even if I, the chairman, my company is doing such a thing, I expect the authorities to crack down on my company and bring it to book.
On the payment of the One City Levy as part of the amended Energy Sector Levies Act, COMAC declared commitment to support government in solving the power challenges, but called for some relief for various oil marketing companies. All right, it's a Tuesday time for the exchange, and the Ghana Revenue Authority is introducing a revised taxation scheme aimed at bringing micro and small businesses into the formal tax net, ensuring they contribute to the country's domestic revenue. To explain this initiative further, we are joined by Chief Revenue Officer Victor Yao Akogo, the project manager overseeing the modified taxation program at the GRA. Thank you so much for joining us on the marketplace and for the exchange. So talk to us about the goals of this modified taxation scheme.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to your cherished listeners. We've come to realize that the informal sector represents a significant portion of the Ghana's economy, and it is a vital area for revenue generation, and it has huge revenue potential. But we have not been able to, fully rope them into the tax net because of challenges that we encounter. Mm. But modified taxation has come to be able to expand the tax net and increase revenue. GRA has come to identify that we have three sources through which an income is earned: employment, business, and investment. But our focus under modified taxation is business. Mm. So we are saying that come 1st July today, we are trying to create awareness in the market space where self-employed individuals who are earning business income ought to register with Ghana Revenue Authority and pay taxes in a simplified, flexible, and convenient and easy way.
So is this a new type of tax? You say it's a modified tax scheme. And how does it differ from the traditional tax payment methods?
Okay, thank you very much. Modified taxation is not a new tax system. It is a tax that has been in our books for a very long time, 2015, and we are implementing it in phases. The phase one approach is where vehicle income tax, those businessmen who have commercial vehicles and are using that on our roads, pay vehicle income tax, and tabletop taxpayers also pay tax stamp. That is the phase one approach. Although 2020 COVID came in to suspend the payment, but the sunset clause has been removed, and therefore all income earners in this space ought to pay tax. This is not a new tax. The phase two approach is like we taxing taxpayers based on their turnover. If you earn income or you earn revenue, which is more than 20,000 Ghana cedis, but not exceeding 500,000 Ghana cedis, you pay 3% as flat amount on your turnover as tax. Mm. This is the second phase of the modified taxation, and we want to expand the tax net, increase more revenue, and promote voluntary tax compliance.
So who is eligible to participate in this taxation program?
Thank you very much. A self-employed individual who is resident, a Ghanaian, and earns business income exclusively sourced in Ghana, is eligible to register. His turnover must not exceed 500,000. What it means is that the turnover must range between 20,000 Ghana cedis up to 500,000 Ghana cedis. Then he qualifies to register under this modified taxation scheme.
Yeah, talk to us a bit more about the income or business thresholds for the different categories under this scheme.
Thank you very much. Under this scheme, modified taxation scheme, the law gives us three categorization. That the first category is the presumptive tax based on installment. Here, if a tax self-employed individual earns income and the turnover is up to 20,000 Ghana cedis, he pays tax 45 Ghana cedis on quarterly basis. For the whole year, he pays 180 Ghana cedis. The second, when the turnover is up to 15,000 Ghana cedis, he pays 35 Ghana cedis as tax for a quarter. Then, if the turnover for the year is up to 10,000 Ghana cedis, he pays 10 Ghana cedis, 25 Ghana cedis a quarter as tax. This is the first category of modified taxation we call presumptive tax based on installment. The second category is the presumptive tax based on turnover. This is where you pay a 3% flat rate on the turnover that you make. The turnover range must be more than 20,000 Ghana cedis, but not exceeding 500,000 Ghana cedis. We have the third category, which is the modified cash basis. Under the modified cash basis, it's almost similar to the turnover tax, but under the modified cash, you are given a limited allowable deduction. The expenses you incurred before generating the revenue, you are given that as an allowable deduction before your tax is determined using a graduated rate.
So as we understand it, businesses are supposed to register for this program. What documents are needed for them to do so?
Thank you very much. Because we have made this modified taxation scheme a simplified, flexible, convenient, and easy way, the taxpayer needs only his Ghana card, his telephone number, and also the GPS location. He also needs to tell us the turnover, the sales that he makes at the end of every day. Then we will calculate the number of days that he opens up his shop, then multiply the revenue he makes a day by the number of days that he opens. If he makes a sales, 200 Ghana cedis a day, then he opens up his shop for 6 days, 200 times 6 days, times the number of weeks that he opens up the shop, then times the number of months, then we establish his annual turnover. Then out of that, 3% is paid as a flat tax for the whole year.
So how does this scheme address informal businesses operating in remote areas but generating income?
So this scheme is going to provide a flexible platform where we're going to make available mobile apps and modified taxation scheme systems available to those taxpayers in the hinterland, in the rural areas, so that it will bring convenient means to them to pay their taxes in a simplified way. In paying their taxes, they need to dial the short code USSD *222# to make payment, or dial *880# to make payment. This is the short code that we are making available to them. But they need to register first with the Ghana Revenue Authority, use our modified taxation scheme application, self-service online application to register. We are making available mobile application also for them to use to register. We are also making available bulk registration platform for the identifiable groups also to register their members. All merchant same holders are also deemed to be in business. They are also to register with the Ghana Revenue Authority and pay the taxes. It is the taxes that we use for development in this country. And GRA is the only institution mandated to collect the taxes for the development of the country. For road construction, for hospital, for schools, payment of salary to security personnel, doctors and nurses, and promotion of social intervention like free SHS, we all need these taxes. So let us support government in paying our taxes to promote development in the country.
Well, very well.
Thank you.
Yeah. My last question, I mean, the program has kick-started today. What's the strategy to ensure compliance? Obviously, more people need to hear about this program and must be made to, you know, sort of roll onto it. How are you going to ensure compliance?
Thank you very much. So GRA has over 60, branches, if I may say so, or tax service centers. The Commissioner of Domestic Tax Revenue has given instruction that they should create zones. And by that means, zonal leaders are going to be responsible for specific zones where they will go door to door, identify the taxpayers who are doing business but have not registered with the Ghana Revenue Authority, and register them. Because GRA is now a customer-centric institution, we are giving the benefit of the doubt to the taxpayers. Because by law, you are not supposed to even operate your business without registering with the Ghana Revenue Authority. So this time, GRA is coming to you in a more polite and friendly manner. Yours is to make your Ghana card available, register. If you don't register, then it means that you are trying to evade tax. You are trying to conceal income from government. If you look at Article 41J of the 1992 Constitution, it says that no, the duties of a citizen includes disclosing his income appropriately before the appropriate authority, which is Ghana Revenue Authority, and pay the appropriate taxes thereon. So every income earner ought to register with Ghana Revenue Authority and pay the taxes that is due to the state.
Great stuff. Thank you so much, Chief Revenue Officer, the GRA, Victor Yakogo, also the overseer of the modified taxation program being implemented by the Ghana Revenue Authority. Thank you so much for the education. We'll keep monitoring how this goes. Appreciate your time on the Marketplace.
Thank you.
All right. You're watching the Marketplace on Joy News. We're taking a short break. We have some more stories coming up. Now, MTN Ghana has officially brought the curtain down on this year's Yellow Care campaign with a heartfelt closing ceremony that celebrated the organization's meaningful engagement with communities across the country. Yes, more.
Held under the theme Connecting at the Roots, Connecting Communities Through the Use of Digital Tools, the event highlighted MTN's commitment to creating a lasting impact on individuals and underserved areas through tailored outreach initiatives. Speaking to the media, Chief Corporate Services and Sustainability Officer at MTN Ghana, Ajoa Wiafi, recounted the team's journey across regions, noting how the campaign has positively affected lives.
We partnered with a number of organizations to be able to go across the country to train the youth in digital skills, in mobile phone repair, just things that could give them an immediate livelihood or means of support and a way of living. We also partnered with OITC or TI. With the support of their students, we were able to sew 500 school uniforms. So, using MTN volunteers, 500 school uniforms that were given out to deprived schools in rural communities. We also went to Togome. In Togome, the main source of livelihood is pottery making. And we wanted to change the face of the pottery making by making it more modern, and also introducing them to new ways of marketing and, you know, supporting them to look beyond their immediate environs and into a bigger market.
As part of its drive to enhance future outreach, MTN Ghana unveiled a new digital mobile track at the event. The mobile unit, equipped with digital tools and educational resources, is set to revolutionize how MTN reaches remote communities.
So this digital track is going to be going to underserved areas where people who would ordinarily not have access to, you know, these kinds of facilities, so that we'll be able to train them in some of the things that we talked about, cloud computing, web design, mobile phone repairs, and all the things that there's a whole training program around this where we'll have trainers who will go out with them and train people. So it's going to be moving from place to place to place to place, and to do that. So when it goes to a certain place, we'll stay there for a while. We get school children to come in, experience it, train them, and then we move to the next place. And so that's what we have. And it's all because we are pushing digital inclusion. We know that having digital skills now is a must.
As the Yellow Care campaign concludes for the year, MTN Ghana says it's already setting its sights on new horizons to build a more inclusive and connected Ghana. The event brought together
All right, and that's the Marketplace. Thanks for watching, everyone. Check out our stories on myjoyonline.com/business, including the story about this man, Achihese, who is stepping down as CEO of Gibbs. You can read more on our website, myjoyonline.com/business. My name is Daryl Kwal. Thanks for watching. We will be back same time tomorrow. Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the Marketplace. Coming up this afternoon, Ghana Revenue Authority rolls out new tax policy measures from the 1st of July, targeting real estate, non-life insurance and other critical sectors of the economy. Also coming up, Ghana to get $360 million from the World Bank to help stabilize the economy and lay foundation for growth after the group approved disbursements last week. Plus, Ghana making significant strides in dealing with the current standoff with Afriexim Bank over debt restructuring. Deputy Minister of Finance Thomas Nyakwampem is confident of a deal being reached soon on the matter.
It's a well-structured meeting and consensus building has made everything smooth for everybody. And I say bravo to the shareholders, management and leadership of Afriexim Bank.
My name is Daryl Kwao. Details coming up. First up, the Ghana Revenue Authority has announced that key changes to the country's tax administration law will come into effect from the 1st of July. Among the significant updates are the introduction of a modified taxation scheme, the imposition of value-added tax on real estate transactions, and extension of VAT to non-life insurance services. Here's a business desk report.
The modified taxation scheme introduces a flexible tax payment framework targeting micro, small and medium businesses across the country. This is in line with the Income Tax Act 2015, Act 896. Acting Commissioner General of the GRA, Anthony Kwesi Sapong, clarified in a recent media engagement that the scheme is not an additional tax, but a simplified method of calculating personal income tax for eligible traders and entrepreneurs. This initiative comes with multiple payment options, including mobile money, USSD code SAR222 hash, and bank deposits. The Special Voluntary Disclosure Program, known as the SVDP, which was rolled out in 2024, is also being deepened. This program provides an opportunity for citizens to voluntarily disclose incomes earned abroad, which they haven't paid tax on. VAT on rental of immovable property and the supply of immovable property by estate developers will also be implemented. This requires that all state developers charge a 5% VAT on the supply of immovable property. VAT on non-life insurance will also take effect. The combination of these measures represents a balanced approach to revenue generation.
So Ghana is making some significant progress in dealing with the current standoff with Afriexim Bank over restructuring of debts owed the institution. This is what Joy Business has picked up from persons close to the transactions in Abuja, Nigeria. Meanwhile, Deputy Minister of Finance Thomas Nyakwampem is confident of a deal being reached soon on the matter. He spoke to Joy Business on the sidelines of a shareholders' meeting of Afriexim Bank in Nigeria.
It's a well-structured meeting and consensus building has made everything smooth for everybody. And I say bravo to the shareholders, management and leadership of Afriexim Bank. I think we are on course and Afriexim will continue to support Africa.
Who should the new incoming president?
Well, he has been in the system for a long time, so he knows the history, he knows the tradition, and he has pledged to build on the foundation that has been laid before him. And so we believe, we trust that he will deliver.
What is your expectation going forward as well?
My expectation is that Afriexim will grow and that it will be able to support Africa's development. Because Africa understands Africa. And so Afriexim Bank is in the best position to finance development projects in Africa in a way that will fit the needs of Africans.
I wanted to find out whether you've been able to resolve some of the issues that came up previously in terms of Ghana and then Afriexim Bank.
I think the most important thing is for us to talk. Media exchanges will not help Ghana. It will not help Afriexim Bank. And so it's important
so that you are talking to resolve the issue.
Yes,
basically,
we are.
I heard you made some significant
yes,
progress.
Yes, we are.
In Ghana,
Very soon we'll let you know what is
happening.
Well, we've got more from Abuja, Nigeria. A renowned economist and policy analyst, Professor Jeffrey David Sachs, has raised concerns about the models used by rating agencies for countries like Ghana. The economist raised the concerns on the sidelines of the annual meetings of the Afriexim Bank.
Well, for a lot of people,
the guess is over. That is, who was going to become the new president and board chairman of AfriExim Bank at the end of this meeting? Well, shareholders overwhelmingly voted for the vice president in charge of legal, corporate governance and services at the annual meetings here, George Olumbi, to steer the affairs of AfriExim Bank. When we caught up with him, this is what he had to say about his vision and plan for the institution. About 100% endorsement. What do you make of this election, please?
Extraordinary for the African continent, and extraordinary for the work of AfriExim Bank, and extraordinary for the support that we have from the shareholders that allows us to do the things that they ask us to do, even when people say we do not have their protection.
He believes that a lot of work needs to be done, and he would not let shareholders down based on how the vote went at the meetings here.
Transforming Africa's trade, change the nature of Africa's trade, take it out of commodities, process it, change the direction of the trade, multiply the direction of the trade.
For the outgoing president, he maintains that he needs some rest because of a lot of work he did over the years, and that is what he's going to do.
If somebody has been running for 31 years, there comes a time where the person stops, pauses, and rests. So the priority will be to rest.
Well, for many people who have been following the workings of AfriExim Bank, it's about how the bank can sustain the gains that they've made and to ensure that it becomes that world-class financial institution, but actually African institution supporting African countries with a lot of things. For Ghana, we'll not forget about how the bank came through for us in the COVID-19, extended more than $700 million to assist the economy. Well, that's a wrap of our coverage of the annual meetings from Abuja, Nigeria. George Jaffe brought you all the updates here. Have a great day.
All right, George Jaffe with that update on the AfriExim Bank elections, where Dr. George Olumbi was elected president. He is the incoming president of the AfriExim Bank. And as part of his mandate, he's going to ensure there is more trading amongst African countries, as you heard in that report. Now, back to our earlier story to do with renowned economist and policy analyst Professor Jeffrey David Sachs raising concerns about the models used by rating agencies for countries like Ghana. Take a listen.
Speaking on the sidelines of the AfriExim annual meetings here in Abuja, Nigeria, renowned economist Jeffrey Sachs argued that he doesn't understand why the rating agencies, for instance, have a cap for developing countries like Ghana when it comes to ratings, and that there's actually a level that they can't go beyond.
The next period of rapid growth is Africa's turn. Not that India will suddenly slow down, or China. Both will continue to grow rapidly, as will other parts of Asia. But I think Africa can be and should be the premier growth of the world economy from now until the goal of 2063, the 100th anniversary of African unity. All of the vision of Africa as a high-income continent is completely achievable, in my view, between now and 2063. Indeed, I think that's the course that Africa will achieve.
He believes that the time has come to take a second look at the module and how they go about things.
The first area of investment that is the gold mine for Africa is investment in education. The second area of investment is in infrastructure. So power is crucial. The power sector, the digital connectivity, the road network, the rail connections, the ports, the airports, the urban infrastructure. This is a major part of the investment scene. The third area of investment, of course, is the business sector. It's the private economy. And that is where the private entrepreneurs have, of course, the overwhelming responsibility. But there's no doubt a tremendous burst of entrepreneurship across Africa if the skilled work is there and if the physical infrastructure is in place. Then Africa will achieve a boom in the private sector as well.
In a separate event, chairman of the Dangote Group also was worried about the fact that enough is not being done for indigenous businesses to raise funds and turn around their economies. He believes that those who have what it takes to develop their respective countries in Africa are local businesses and not foreign investors. He also argued that a lot should be done to assist indigenous firms in Africa because they have what it takes to turn things around.
We have 60% of the world's arable land.
Yeah.
Agriculture is not cheap. Okay. We have all the mineral sources from gold, lithium, diamonds, everything. We have it here. So all what you need to do is to start giving conditions to people. Don't come and take my cocoa and process over there, and you come now and sell the chocolate to me 20 times the cost of that chocolate. We African champions, we need to understand that we are the only people that can make Africa great.
Yeah.
Nobody will do that for us.
We'll call it putting the icing on the cake. The president of Afreximbank Bank, in his address to shareholders at the meeting here, talked about how things have been transformed at the bank.
In view of the enormity of the challenges arising from severe cuts of development assistance, we plan to raise the size of the trust fund to $5 billion from $1 billion with shareholders' approval, which we hope we can get tomorrow. The area of political and business leaders who have joined us from the Caribbean speak volumes regarding the progress we have made with our outreach to our friends, brothers, and sisters in the CARICOM.
He still believes that a lot more still needs to be done going forward to make it the premier financial institution in Africa.
I also like to reiterate that the progress we have made as a bank wouldn't have been possible without the unflinching support that shareholders provided during the last decade. The equity injections enabled us to deliver on our core mandate and helped us to confront short-term economic shocks. The investment by the bank since 2011 aggregate to about $2 billion and are rapidly transforming the economic landscape of the beneficiary countries, boosting SME growth and job creation, as well as trade in value-added products.
For many, the surprise of the occasion was when the president of Nigeria conferred on him the highest award in Nigeria to Professor Umama in terms of what he's done for the institution and even Nigeria.
I have the honor and privilege to recognize you, the outstanding contribution of Professor Benedict Orama, by conferring you with one of Nigeria's highest honors, the Grand Commander of the Order of Niger. Thank you.
From the event center here at Abuja, Nigeria, this is George Afri, reporting for Joy Business.
All right, turning to one of our top stories this afternoon, Ghana is set to receive some $360 million from the World Bank to help stabilize the economy and lay foundation for growth after the executive board approved disbursement of this amount to the country. Here's more in the following report.
Disbursement is coming under the World Bank's International Development Association for the country's second resilient recovery development policy and financing operation. It's primarily meant to lay the grounds for sustainable and resilient economic growth, as well as job creation. It would seek to help government restore fiscal sustainability, support the financial sector, private sector development, and improve energy, as well as financial discipline, greater domestic revenue mobilization, enhance the stability of the financial sector, and promote private sector investment for the private sector-led growth.
You're watching The Marketplace. We're taking a short break. When we come back, we've got your financial markets update. Now, welcome back to The Marketplace. There are heightened calls for the private sector and the government to take a critical look at investing heavily in Ghana's local seed production industry. Stakeholders in the agric sector, particularly scientists, observe a lasting gap in the adoption and upscaling of diverse locally developed seeds. Despite the release of some early seeds by research institutions, the large-scale production of those of these certified local seeds has seen low interest from the private sector, with imminent threats to food security. Emmanuel Baidkoku was at the Maiden Researchers Summit, Researchers and Investors Summit in Agriculture held in Kumasi, and found this report.
Ghana has made significant strides in local seed production, varying from cereals and leguminous crops to root tubers. Research institutions like the Crops Research Institute of the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research continue to lead the charge in producing improved indigenous seeds for farmer adoption. Speaking at the Maiden Researchers Investors Summit in Agriculture, Director of the Crops Research Institute, Professor Maxo Dakwasanti, emphasized the urgent need for investment and transformation of Ghana's seed production sector.
So the current situation for the legumes and the cereals is okay. At least we are able to produce the breeder seed and the foundation seed. The bottleneck again is the certified seed part. The same problem. We don't get proper business people, and people should forgive me. We get people who are just interested in government policy. We need people with deep pockets to take it as a big industry. It's a huge industry around the world, but particularly for vegetable seed, that one we are far behind. But now we are beginning to get varieties, and producing vegetable seed is a lot of work. So the same call, we need people with money.
The 2025 Researchers and Investors Summit assembled industry experts, academic professionals and journalists in Ghana's agriculture sector to dialogue on building resilience in the sector. The event was held on the theme, Bridging Innovation and Investment Gap for a Resilient Agriculture in Ghana. Director of the Agri-I Consult, Richmond Frimpong, highlighted the critical need to build synergy between research and industry as he advocated for tax holidays for industries in the agricultural value chain.
Through the summit, we aim to, one, bridge the innovation to impact divide by translating research into real-world agribusiness solutions. Two, stimulate local and international investment in agricultural innovations. Three, empower young scientists and early stage innovators to become tomorrow's agribusiness leaders. To this end, I entreat the government of Ghana to grant tax holidays to locally manufacturing firms within the agriculture value chain.
CEO of Legacy Crop Improvement Center, Dr. Amos Rutherford Azinu, impressed on the paradigm shift from smallholder to large-scale farming to boost productivity.
Agriculture has a potential to feed not only the entire continent, however, to feed the world as a global stage, and also be able to solve food security. However, realizing this opportunity require a strategic investment. Not just investment, but that investment needs to be very strategic in research and infrastructure, in technology transfer. But we have heard so many times where research have developed good technology, but there's nowhere to take it to. So those investments need to be well structured, need to be well coordinated so that it gets used by the smallholder farmers or whoever want to use it.
But for Joy News, my name is Emmanuel Bright Kweku.
All right, a quick update on the financial markets. Let's begin with the Treasury bills. Is that what we are doing? The Ghana Stock Exchange. All right, let's talk about the Stock Exchange. It is expected to record more laggards this week than gainers. This is due to selling pressures in some stocks. Here's Grace Mullen of Databank Research with a preview of trading activities for this week.
The Treasury got 3.64 billion Ghana cedis, as against the target of 3.
At the close of trading last week, the bulls registered 7 Guinness and 4 Lagards. The Guinness were Total Energies, GCB Bank, Ecobank Ghana, Standard Chartered Bank, Societe Generale Ghana, Cal Bank, and SIC Insurance. Conversely, New Gold, Fund Milk, MTN Ghana, and Enterprise Group all declined. Driven by the gains, the Ghana Stock Exchange Composite Index advanced by 0.62% weekly, the year-to-date gain of 27.82%, while the Data Bank Stock Index increased by 1.74% weekly, the year-to-date gain of 30.36%. Weekly turnover decreased by 21.6% to 21.8 million Ghana cedis after trading 5.8 million shares over 24 counters. MTN Ghana traded the most last week and accounted for 64% of the market turnover. Based on outstanding bids and offers, we tip the share prices of MTN Ghana and Enterprise Group to drop further due to selling pressures. For Joy Business Reports, Grace Munanyun of Data Bank Research.
On the Treasury market, government failed to meet its Treasury bills target for the fourth consecutive week. Here's more.
0.86 billion Ghana cedis. The majority of the bids came from the 91-day bill, with investors offering 2.869 billion Ghana cedis. This represented 75.04% of the total bids. For the 182-day bill, investors tendered in 616.79 million Ghana cedis. The Treasury accepted 385.82 million Ghana cedis. A little over 129 million Ghana cedis of the bids came from the 364-day bill. The Treasury, however, accepted 60.81 million Ghana cedis of the bid. Meanwhile, interest rates continued to dip but marginally on the yield curve. The yield on the 91-day bill went down by a basis point to 14.69%. That of the 182-day bill also declined to 15.25% from the previous weeks of 15.45%. However, the yield on the 364-day bill went up by 9 basis points.
And that's the marketplace. More news on our website, nigeronline.com/business, including an important update on fuel prices. You want to check that out. nigeronline.com/business. My name is Daryl Kwal. Thanks for watching. nigeronline.com/business. My name is Daryl Kwal. Thanks for watching. We will be back same time tomorrow.
Welcome back to the marketplace. My name is Winston Taki, and now to our first business story. The Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of Ghana has maintained that the economy is showing signs of significant improvement with a positive outlook. This was their verdict after they met last Thursday to review developments in the economy. My colleague George Biafe has been going through the document and joins me with more. George, what is the basis for this verdict?
Well, if you go through the statement that they've issued, they say a lot of things. I mean, basically trying to justify why they are making that projection. But a little bit of a background. You know, there's been this whole argument about back and forth about whether indeed this emergency meeting was justified or was necessary or not. And I just want you to go to just a quick line in the statement that the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of Ghana, they have actually issued. If you look through on the screen, it says that what now the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of Ghana held an emergency meeting on Thursday, July 17, determining whether conditions warrant an immediate action ahead of the scheduled one. So if you look at this part, it warranted an immediate action ahead of the scheduled 125 meeting that is last month. This is in line with our commitment to be what? Proactive and also be responsive to policy formulation. So you realize that this line, the Bank of Ghana, is trying to more justify the argument that they had to actually do this meeting. Well, if you go through the statement again, if you go through the last part of it, why it is saying that the economy is expanding as well, it talks about the gross international reserves that has actually seen some significant improvement, and we'll be getting some fine details to explain to you. It's gone up significantly to 11 billion as at the end of June 2025. Now,